Hey everyone, this is History You Actually Wanted to Know with Lady Billie J, and I'm back. I said I did the same thing in my last episode. Like, where have I been? There has been nothing going on in my life other than boredom, like I said last time, and just laziness. But anyway, let's just get into the episode, because then I'm just going to ramble. Okay, so I do want to say that unlike a lot of my other episodes, this one, I'm giving a bit of a listener's discretion because it does highlight a lot of dark topics that are likely to stir up trauma, maybe in others. So if this is an episode that's not for you, you are able to skip. No hard feelings, go for it. But it is a really important topic, and I really should talk about it. I've sat and I thought about it. Should I do an episode like this? Should I not? What would be the repercussions if I did do it? But I was just like, you know what? Let's just go for it. Because it's important. It's really important. But I also respect and understand if some people just can't listen to it, and that's okay. I understand that some people are just not in a position to hear or listen to stories of trauma, rape, or sexual assault. You may not have experienced the trauma at all, and that's okay. You might still feel uncomfortable, and that's totally up to you. Feel free to stop at any time or take this episode in pieces. It's totally up to you, or like I said, you don't have to listen at all. I also don't plan to sugarcoat anything. I think doing so is a disservice to these women's experiences. And again, I don't want to assume that this sort of thing didn't happen to men either, because I'm 100% sure that it did. 100%. But I'm focusing on women this go around. So why the subject? With everything going on, the Me Too movement, and I'm a very big proponent of the Me Too movement, would not happen without Black women. It's not happening. And in order to understand why, we have to understand the story. And it's also important that even now in today's society, there's a constant struggle between men trying to assert dominance over women's bodies. A prime example is whether or not women should have access to birth control, free birth control, whether or not women should have access to abortion, safe abortions. And for many of us who are very, devout Christians, the vast majority of us, we simply don't agree with abortion, myself included. However, it is not my decision on what another woman does with her body. And another thing is, even though I might not agree personally, why is it my decision to say she shouldn't have an abortion when I'm not out there talking about let me raise the kid when it comes? The idea that people who do not have a vagina are making decisions about vaginas is very weird to me. Just because you have an opinion, just like how I have an opinion, it doesn't matter between what's right and what's wrong. It's not my business what another woman does with her body. And this is a prime example of men deciding what to do with a woman's body solely for their pleasure and solely for their weird, creepy tendencies. And another reason why I thought this was important is because the vast majority of Black families have experienced or know someone in their line that has been raped. It's very common, and most specifically raped by white men, and have experienced some sort of rape by white men. And I know specifically for myself, there are a number of women or young children who I've seen pictures of from the 1800s in my own family that are extremely fair-skinned. And I'm not going to say that loving relationships didn't happen. But a lot of times in the American South, when you see a very fair Black person, the likelihood that a rape was involved is extremely high. I'm not trying to assume, but the likelihood is high. And in the American South, there was something called paramour rights. And this is where a white man had the right to take a Black woman as his lover. Keep in mind, the word paramour means a lover of a married person. And a lover would imply consent, correct? So at no point did I think any of these women should be categorized as lovers at all, but I think it was just trying to put a label on something. And that's weird. And what is rape? The U.S. Department of Justice defines rape as the penetration, no matter how slight, of the vagina or anus with any body part or object, or oral penetration by a sex organ of another person without the consent of the victim. And in this episode, there will be a lot of quotes. I think the most quotes I've ever had in any episode. And that's only because I wanted these experiences to come from these women and not from myself. And yeah, I'll give my opinions here and there, but these words are coming from them, not from me. I want them to speak. Even though they've been dead for hundreds of years, I want them to be able to speak and say what they need to say. Keeping that definition in mind, this is History You Actually Wanted to Know with Lady Billie Day. So our first real life experience is going to be from Harriet Jacobs. She was a slave who was born in 1813 in North Carolina and spent her later years as an abolitionist. Contrary to custom for the time, she was taught by her mistress, Margaret, how to read and how to write. And again, her situation was a lot different because she lived with her freed grandmother, whose name was Molly, as her mother had died early. So even though she's a slave, she's living with a free woman and she's able to read and write. Eventually, her enslaver, Margaret, died in 1824. And she was willed to a man named James Norcom. And this is where things get dark. James would harass her and abuse her for the majority of her adolescence. And the weird thing is that they never had intercourse. He never raped her. But he was never willing to force her. But his goal was to try to coerce her. And on a number of occasions, he told her that he had the ability and the right to kill her at any time. Throughout the years of the sexual harassment, she noted in her autobiography, quote, "But I now entered my 15th year. My master began to whisper foul things in my ear. Young as I was, I could not remain ignorant of their import," end quote. Not only was she sexually harassed by her master, her mistress also treated her badly. Harriet says, quote, "I would rather drudge out my life on a cotton plantation to the grave open to give me rest than to live with an unprincipled master and a jealous mistress." And on top of that, her mistress even said to her, "You suffer, do you? I'm glad of it. You deserve it all and more too." My thing is, why in the world are we punishing some other woman for what your husband is doing? And I think, like, looking back or looking at all these facts now, they're so mad at their husbands that they're taking it out on these women. That's the thing. It's like, oh, I can't do anything with my husband because, you know, men cheat. Blah, blah, blah. I can't do anything, so I'm just going to take it out on this little girl right here. This 15-year-old girl who's being harassed by this old man, and you're taking it out on her? Wild. Just wild. Harriet also noted in her autobiography that Norcom, quote, "was a crafty man and resorted to many ways to accomplish his purpose. Sometimes he had a stormy, terrific way that made his victims tremble. He was my master. I was compelled to live under the same roof with him, where a man 40 years my senior daily violated the most sacred commandments of nature. He told me I was his property, and that I must be subject to his will in all things. Where could I find protection? No matter whether the slave girl be as black as ebony or fair as her mistress, in either case, there is no shadow of law to protect her from insult, from violence, or even from death. All these inflicted by fiends who bear the shape of men," end quote. Let's just let that stick there. She had no choice in this matter. This man is whispering nasty stuff in her ears, and she just has to take it. Assault, assault, hello. Harassment, harassment, hello. And not only that was he whispering little nasty stuff in her ear, He also would not let her be with any other man. So there was some guy that I think she liked, and she went with him. I mean, sorry, she went to her enslaver and said, you know, I like this guy. Can I marry him? No. And he flew off in a rage. So eventually what she did was, there was this white lawyer who was frequenting the area, and she had two children by him, Joseph and Louisa. And Norcom became so angry with her that she had the nerve to have not one, but two children by some other white man that was not him, that she had to flee. And she made the most difficult decision, and that was to leave her children behind. But Harriet was very, very smart. What she did was, she pretended to run away. But for years, she lived in her grandmother's house in a crawl space. So she could see her children from this crawl space in the home, but her children never knew she was there for years. And at this point, she's all but forgotten. We think that she's fled. But eventually, after, I think, 7 years of hiding, she escapes to New York. The father of these children, this white lawyer, has bought the children from Norcom and has sent them to live with her in New York. But there was some sadness to Harriet. She says that, quote, when they told me my newborn babe was a girl, my heart was heavier than it had ever been before. Slavery is terrible for men, but it is far more terrible for women, end quote. So it's like she knew that this cycle was going to continue. And there was like, there's this thing that most Black people know, is that if you were going to be a slave, you better hope to God that you are the most hideous woman on earth. Because if you were beautiful, you were cursed with beauty. You had to always contend with men coming to bother you, which is just crazy. Anyway, she publishes her autobiography in 1861, and it was called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. And at the time, she detailed her experiences and that of others in the book. And she gave everyone a pseudonym. So Dr. Norcom, in the book, he was called Dr. Flint, and she was called Linda rather than Harriet, things like that. Eventually in 1850, Norcom falls down the steps and dies. Harriet goes on to live a very, very long life. She dies in 1897 in Washington, D.C. She was able to work with Frederick Douglass, see the end of the war, work as an abolitionist. She won in the end. And her epitaph on her gravestone reads, patient in tribulation and fervent in spirit. I shouldn't say that she won in the end, because she shouldn't have been in that scenario anyway. But hearing that Norcom fell down a flight of steps and cracked his head, I don't feel bad about that at all. At all. I highly recommend that if you have the time, please, please read Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. The book is fabulous. It's really a beautiful, well-written, detailed read. And not beautiful and like it was some happy ending, which she, I guess, kind of had, maybe. But it's beautiful in that she risked much in order to share this information with us all. Because it was unprecedented. It was unprecedented for Black women to write about rape and sexual assault and sexual harassment in the South. And this is one of the first books to do so. And that is incredibly dope. So please, please, if you have the chance and you love to read, please read Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl by Harriet Jacobs. You will not regret it. Our next example is Ruby McCollum. And many people do not know who Ruby McCollum is. And in my head, that's not a mistake. People like to wash away women who cause uproar. And Ruby caused nothing but sheer uproar, and she's dope for reasons we will learn shortly. Ruby McCollum was born in 1909 in Florida. She was extremely smart. She did well in school, and she married a man named Sam McCollum, and they eventually moved to New York in the Great Black Migration. While they were in New York, they opened a number of businesses, like a funeral home, and they became extremely wealthy. Eventually, they made their way back to Florida, maybe for financial reasons, you know, take all that money to someplace a little bit poorer. I don't know. But I personally, if I fled the South, I'm not going back. Whatever. But in August of 1952, she meets Dr. Leroy Adams, who is the town's doctor. And he's also like running for a Senate seat, I believe. She alleged that he raped her a number of times in the home she shared with her husband and eventually had not one, but two children by this man. During this time, he still continued to serve as the family doctor for herself, her husband, and her children. And on top of that, on top of raping her a number of times, she still had to pay him for medical services. One day, Dr. Adams attempted to rape her once again, and she had had enough. After they had a brawl, they were going at it, she shot him 4 times. The next day, her husband had died of a heart attack while he was trying to shelter his children away at another home. Eventually, she was convicted by an all-white jury for murder and sentenced to the electric chair. But eventually the case was appealed and she was declared mentally incompetent and had to stay in a mental hospital until 1974. There's a really, really good documentary on this. If you have Amazon Prime, it's on there for free, or I'm not sure where else you can find it. But anyway, the documentary is called You Belong to Me, Sex, Race, and Murder in the South, The Ruby McCollum Story. And in the documentary, what bothered me the most was that people who had a relationship or knew Dr. Adams, they were just like, oh yeah, he was the town doctor. He was a good dude. Like, I don't know about Ruby, da 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 da. And I'm like, it's not every day that a black person in the South just kills a white man in that time period. If you were getting killed up, it's because you did something. But that's neither here nor there. But it was really disheartening to hear all these people trying to continue, even though there was evidence that he had raped Ruby. First of all, there's children who are evidence. Second of all, she gives details. And I believe she's the first black woman to give details of rape in a case presented to a jury. She gave details about Leroy that people don't know. So you know she's not lying. But it's just like, you're just going to keep saying it over and over and over. It's just odd. And it's weird. And it's just like, you're so encompassed by rape, or you're so focused on trying to justify that black women should be used at your disposal, that you're going to just say that this guy was cool just because. I can't. Anyway, her story was extensively covered by Zora Neale Hurston. And if you're familiar with Zora Neale Hurston, she wrote, Their Eyes Were Watching God. She was a black anthropologist. Like, Zora Neale Hurston's dope. So Zora Neale Hurston covered her story, and that's how it kind of gained notoriety. After her release from the mental hospital, Ruby had little to no knowledge of what happened to her at all. She didn't remember any of the events. And the reason was because she was heavily medicated during that time period, and she experienced electroshock. Mental hospitals in the 60s were, in my opinion, barbaric. And for you to go through that much trauma that you don't even remember what got you there in the first place, she was going through it. She died in 1992 at the age of 82. Our next example, Mary Lumpkin. She was a slave who was the wife of a white jailer, Robert Lumpkin, who owned Lumpkin's Slave Jail, also known as Devil's Half Acre in Richmond, Virginia. It was the largest slave holding center in Richmond. And let's just break down this thing right here. She is the wife of a white jailer. This is extremely rare for an interracial marriage during this time period. Not much is known about Mary other than that she was extremely fair and that she was beautiful. That's the only thing that we know. But we do know that she and Robert had a number of children together, I think five. And we also know that Robert was an extremely and exceptionally cruel man. However, Robert ensured that all of their children had gone to boarding schools. They were treated well. They married well. When Robert died, he left all of his money and his land to his wife. Nobody knows the nature or the intricacies of their relationship, but in the event that a man who owns something called Devil's Half Acre and is known for being cruel asks you for sex or to marry him, what are you going to say? I know what I'm saying because I'm not trying to die. You'll do anything to safeguard your own life. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a prime example of rape. My next example is Sally Hemings, and I've addressed Sally Hemings in my previous seasons, who I adore greatly. So listen to that episode, because I won't go into too much detail about her, because we've already done that. But she was the mistress of Thomas Jefferson for years. But if you're in a situation where you can't say no, because there's an implication that you might face harm, or others that you know, your family members might face harm, and you do it, that is still rape. It's still sexual assault. It's still sexual harassment. Ugh. Like, anyway, she's often when people have referred to her during that time period, they call her Jefferson's mistress, Jefferson's concubine. Calling Sally Hemings a mistress or a concubine is an insult. And granted, I'll be the first one to tell you that if you sleeping with some woman's husband, you are 100% a hoe and 100% a mistress. As much as I love Olivia Pope, she is 100% a hoe and 100% a mistress. However, Sally Hemings was neither of those things. Just because she had children with this man and stuck around with this man does not mean that she had to be a willing participant. She had to do what she had to do to live. That does not make you a mistress or a concubine at all. And to add insult to injury, Thomas Jefferson does not make mention of Sally Hemings at any point in his life. The only time Thomas Jefferson spoke about Sally Hemings was in the play Hamilton. That's it. When they said Sally, that's the only time Jefferson has uttered some words, which was in a play. That's it. I can't. My next and final example is no one in particular. However, there are tons of examples in the slave narratives. And during, I think it's like the 20s, 30s, historians went to the South and recorded what slavery was like to slaves who were still alive. Keep in mind, slaves were still alive in the 30s and 40s. Like, let's think about that. My grandmother's, one was born in 1941. And the other one was born in 1937. Which means their lives overlapped with slaves. I don't want anyone to think for one second that slavery was a long time ago. It was not. My grandmothers lived at the same time as slaves. And if we want to get super technical, my grandmother's grandfather was a slave. Slavery in Puerto Rico was not abolished until the 1880s. Her grandfather was a full-on, working for a master, slave. Slavery was not a long time ago. These events happened not long ago. And I think people forget about that. Slavery ended 160 some years ago. That's nothing. We have to think about that, that these events are not something that happened a long time ago. I'm not talking about other things, the ancient wonders of the world where these were created thousands of years ago. Slavery was a blink ago. I just want us to take a moment and think about it. Like, I don't want you to think that these stories happened so long ago that we can detach ourselves from them. No, there are products of rape running around today. Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson's descendants are alive today. If you look it up, there's an article where Thomas Jefferson's descendants that he had with his wife and the descendants he had with Sally Hemings have met each other. They are around. Products of rape are around. Today. Do not at any time ever forget that. Anyway, that's my, spiel. On to the next examples. Children born to slave women took on the status of the mother. If the mother was a slave, you were a slave. If your mother was free, you were free. So owners would literally get, excuse me, not owners, enslavers would literally get free labor from the product of their rapes. So not only are you taking my sanity, you've raped me, you've caused this trauma upon me, I have to give birth to this child. And this child, you can do whatever you want to do with this child because they too are a slave. It doesn't matter if they are your child or not. And it's always bothered me that blacks, white people during that time period, always assumed that blacks were so beneath them. We're beneath you, but we can have sex with you though. We can get raped though. Like, do you see how odd that is? It's just... it doesn't make any sense. And one slave recounted, now keep in mind, the way that I'm speaking, I'm going to quote this slave is not, I'm not speaking in their vernacular. I'm speaking in a way that you and I speak today. Quote, this slave girl got mad. She took and punched old massa and made him break loose. And then she gave him a shove and pushed his hind parts down in a hot pot of soap. It burned him near to death. Massa never did bother slave girls anymore. End quote. It's support. Burn him. Burn that man, please. And then there's another account, a slave named Minnie Folks. She gave this account in 1937. She was quoted in the slave narratives of saying, my mother did suffer misery. You know, there was an overseer who used to tie mother up in the barn. This old man would start beating her naked till the blood ran down her back to her heels. It was a whip they used to use on horses. It was a piece of metal about as wide as my hand from little finger to thumb. I asked mother, what's she done for them to beat you so? She said, nothing. Other than she refused to be a wife to this man. End quote. I'll just let that speak for itself anyway. So I understand that this was a really deep topic and the deepest I've ever kind of spoken about. But like I said, In order to honor our ancestors or honor those who came before us, honor those who lived before us, we have to talk about them because Black women for so long have been silenced that if we bring these stories to the forefront, they can no longer be. And another thing is if you know the information, if you know where the suffering came from, you no longer have an excuse. You can't say I didn't know. Oh, these light-skinned people running around. You know where they came from. You know how it happened. There are still, like I said, there are still products of rape in the American South. Today. I just think we should really, really and truly think about it. That's harsh. And like I said, this was really heavy. It's heavy for me. It was heavy for me to research because it's like for those of us who have had generations who lived in the American South, my father's family was from South Carolina. My mother's was from Alabama. And you know that they have experienced these things, or they've seen someone who's experienced this. Because the events that I've talked about have occurred from 1780s to 1952. And I'm sure that such things have continued and continued and continued. Keep in mind, and let us not forget that not only today are Black women still not listened to, not taken seriously, and are not heard. This is a prime example of that. But let us not always mark and mar these women that I mentioned as victims. Because they were victims. They were. I won't take that. However, their stories help us and they speak to us today. If you lived in that time period and you spoke about what happened to you, in my head, you are a hero. You have to be. Do you know how much you're risking? You're risking your life. You're risking your family's life. Just so other people have the knowledge they need to have. But anyway, this episode has gone dark enough. And I'm going to lighten it up a little bit. And that's it. That's the end. I apologize that this was so dark. And if you stuck with me through this part, I thank you. And if you didn't stick with me through this part, and you probably won't hear this part, I thank you as well. Because this was a hard topic. It's very, very difficult to talk about. And that's it. No more sad stuff. That's it. I'm sorry. But there is, speaking about history and positive things, take a listen to a new podcast and some new buddies I've made.
I'm Ellen.
And I'm Sam. We're the hosts of the Chaos Cast, a podcast about iconic women in history.
We are two college-educated women with too much useless knowledge. Join us every Tuesday as we fight the patriarchy one episode at a time. Each week, we'll be ranting about how iconic women in history have been done dirty and our variety of hyperfixations.
You can find the Chaos Cast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher, or on Instagram at Chaos Podcast.
We hope you enjoy the chaos.
Thank you so much, ladies. I appreciate it. If you haven't already, please look me up on Instagram at Lady Billie Day. That's Lady B-I-L-L-I-E Day. Please rate and review wherever you're listening. I appreciate you immensely. Thank you for sticking through with me because this was tough. And thank you for listening to any other episodes that I have out right now. I apologize for taking forever, but season two is almost done after I do one more episode. So we all can take an expected break. And I can stop being such a failure and being all lazy. I appreciate you so much. I love you all from wherever you are listening. Take care. Be safe. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. This is History You Actually Wanted to Know with Lady Billie Day. And let me hit you with the ASMR.